You can stand back and really embrace them and walk up to these people like you're kind of.
Yeah. Hip, hip, mom, itty, oh, oh, oh. Oh, I hit it. Mom, itty, oh, oh, oh. Mom, itty, oh, oh. Yeah. Mom, itty, oh, oh, oh. Mom, itty, oh, oh.
This is the Greenville Cub Scouts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGSC, Accra, Catskill, and Hudson.
Very good.
Meow. We recommend this station.
Hi, everyone. It's Lily, the youth peer leader from Mental Health Association of Columbia Green County's Clubhouse. Are you a teen wanting to learn more about health education? Maybe you're looking to complete your volunteer hours or in need of a job. The weekly teen clinic on Wednesdays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Family Planning, located on the third floor of the county building on Main Street in Catskill, can help you answer any of your questions. Information can be found at greengovernment.com. Hope to see you there.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio Program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to CatskillMakersInfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra or anytime at WGXC.org.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry. Call us at 551-299-2456. Check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Molly of Baltimore, Maryland. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, February 5th. Local early morning temperatures range from 10 degrees in Steventown to 20 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees. Today we get a break. Not quite as warm as yesterday, but also not nearly as windy. We get a high of 27 happening at 1 p.m. Skies will be mostly sunny. Overnight, temperatures dip to 15 degrees. Then, tomorrow, the winter advisories kick in. It looks like snow will be falling by sunup, which is good because if it's rain, it will cause very dangerous icy conditions. There is an expected transition to freezing rain before ending as rain when the high temperature reaches 32 degrees just before dark. This is a volatile prediction. It could very, very easily change to just rain or just snow or just ice. Avoid travel if you can. Plan extra time into your travel if you can't. Overnight, precipitation stops and temperatures rise to 34 degrees. Friday will be dry, but windy with temperatures lingering around 32 degrees. 17 degrees overnight takes us into a so far calm-looking Saturday. However, there appears to be a few inches of snowfall overnight expected. We'll keep an eye on that as numbers revise. Sunset today will be at 5 o'clock p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7 o'clock a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 20%. Plasma winds will be average at 411 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently solar max standard with an S2 level noise floor. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 194. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to WGYX, or WGXC. I am your host, Bella Lugo, and you are listening to Hometown Canvas. Today I'm here with Gene Feinberg, a local artist who specializes in paintings and incorporating three-dimensional forms. Hi, Gene. Thank you for being here with me today.
Hi, Bella.
Alrighty, so I did want to talk to you about your practice and what your typical day in the studio might look like.
Okay, go in the studio, stir the chi a little bit, sweep up, try to really get focused and get into my head and sort of push everything else out, go to my table, because I tend to work flat on a table, and look at what has been going on there, like is something started that I'm going to continue to work on? Or am I starting something new? If I'm starting something new, it might be just what do I see out of the corner of my eye? That's like my favorite thing to do, to find something like that. I tend to, as you know from being in the studio, that I work on wood panels. So I have to prep those panels before I can even start working. And I usually prep them by backing them and also putting a kind of light gesso wash on them. And the reason I do that is because I like the wood grain to show, and it often inspires what I then decide to do.
Great. What do you think has drawn you to working with your wood panels?
Interesting. Well, I could kind of go and say that I've always been interested both in working abstractly, and also having a three-dimensional element in what I do. Some of the first pieces I worked on were very architectural. I've worked on canvas, but my interest in working now with the wood panels came really out of a series of works on paper that I did. And I was working on both Japanese and Indian paper and had a lot of texture, a lot of surface interest. And when I thought about going back to painting on canvas, it didn't interest me because I wanted to find something that had that kind of textural or pattern or interest to begin with. And gave me a ground to work on, like the ground I had been working on for the works on paper was so interesting to me that I wanted to find something similar, and the wood panels became that.
Great. And I've seen a lot of your work, and I know that you're very color-focused, like color blocking and whatnot. Do you have any interest in how that plays into your texture in your work?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I've been so locked in this black and white period and I can't seem to sort of climb back into color, or the color that I'm using is so subtle that it really relates to the kind of colors that emerge out of the wood panel once it's got this white kind of wash on it. You know, The color work was so related to working with ColorAid paper, which is an art school kind of color paper that you use when you're doing color studies. And the colors are so gorgeous. They're silk screen. They're very rich, deep color. And so I was working with ColorAid papers, and then some of them I've had for umpteen years, and I was working with even paint swatches. So a lot of what I was doing with color at that point, which I'm only partially doing now, had to do with choosing those colors by choosing the paper, which is maybe is kind of a collagist way of working, because I would find those compositions first, and some people would think that they were collage, but they weren't. They were actually oil paint that was mixed to match that color. I know I'm probably getting away from your question, but what became really, really interesting to me, because in earlier work of mine, I had never worked with color this way, and I was doing, it felt like I was a color scientist because I was trying really hard to match these colors that I found in the papers. And when you study color and when you teach color, because I have taught color, you talk about the various qualities of color, which are hue, value, and intensity. Okay. So when I was mixing the color in oil paint to match these color swatches, I found that it was exactly those qualities that I had to deal with. Like I might get the hue of the color right, but the value wasn't right, so I had to lighten it or darken it, or maybe the intensity wasn't right, which meant, you know, how vivid is it? Anyway, those things that were very theoretical in color study became so fascinating to me as I was actually mixing the color. It made me feel like a scientist, and I actually loved that.
It's so interesting you talk about mixing color, because I know as an artist I struggle so much with it. Do you feel that it's helped you not only improve your colors and what colors you use, but you as an artist, do you think it's contributed to like how you view things maybe in everyday life, how you're taking inspiration for your paintings?
Well, it's so interesting because the inspiration came a lot from, it always comes from my life in some way. So when I found a place up in Taconic, and I was still teaching in New York and commuting to New York. But when I came up here and I had a house, I had all these paint swatches, and I was like trying to figure out colors, and I could never figure out colors. I had a million of these swatches around all the time. And those really became the inspiration for how I work with color, because I had never worked with color in that way, that I was actually choosing a color beforehand and then mixing it to match. When I've used color in the past in my work, it's been just very intuitive. And it hasn't been as much of a task to try to emulate a color, let's say. So this felt less intuitive, although the decisions about, okay, I'm laying out which colors I'm going to use, that was intuitive. But the actual mixing, and since I was using paper, it was like collage. But the mixing was not as into, well, I had to really use my knowledge of color to do the mixing. And when I was teaching, a lot of what I was telling students about using color when they're painting was to not use black to darken a color. And, you know, some people think, oh, you know, it's like I hate that and all of that. But you get much more interesting color when you don't use black. And so I set the same task for myself when I was mixing the color. And it was, you know, a task to sort of see how that worked for me. So black was banished. But I'm using a lot of black right now, and probably what you've seen in the studio. And then... But I'm still using some areas where I do try to match color that I choose from papers. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a real change in my work, and actually has me thinking a lot lately about how to get back to color. Like, what does that mean? Like, how is it going to come back in that way it had before?
That makes me wonder as well, how do you deal with creative blocks in your work, whether it be the lack of color or just finding inspiration or finding it hard to get in the studio and put yourself in that mindset?
Well, like I was talking to an artist friend this morning over coffee at Willa's. We were saying it's never easy. It's never smooth sailing. In other words, you have your ups and downs when you're working. I mean, you get very familiar with your materials and confident in how you use them. But what you're talking about and, you know, hitting creative blocks or, like, times when things aren't going as well in the studio. I mean, I've had times when things have really flowed from... I tend to work in bodies of work or in series. When things have flowed from one series to another in just a very natural way, I don't really feel that way right now, and I feel like I'm sort of searching to find how it's going to move in a new direction. And I think that's why I'm thinking more about color, too. But, you know, you just go in there because, in the studio I'm talking about, because, you know, you do something one day and you think it's nothing, or you hate it, or you know, you're just like doing stuff to do stuff, and then you come back and it's like, oh, that's going somewhere. So, you know, that's sort of the way you get around it, I guess. Either that or you go, I need a vacation.
Do you find yourself going back to old works and wanting to revisit them or recreate them? Like, let's say you have something up on the wall and you're like, this looks like it could be done. Are there any times where you go back and maybe like a year and you're like, maybe just a few more touches will make it what I want it to be?
Not in reworking things, although I have to say the piece I'm working on right now was something that... I thought I finished, quote unquote, last year, but I was never really charged up about it. And it was always sort of nagging at me. And so I've been working on it, and it's just been like not going anywhere. But, I had to drag it out. But that's not a really older piece. The really older work is pretty much put to bed. However, if I think about, can I go back? like talking about color, because the earlier work had so much color. Can I go back and do those again? But it's really hard to go back. It's like you were there, all your focus and energy was in a specific place, and it's very hard to go back to that once you've moved away from it. So no, I can't. I don't feel like I can go back and work in ways that I was working on previous series. Maybe I should try it, though.
That makes me wonder, too, are your emotions tied to some of these paintings? Like, can you look at some of your work and you're like, oh, I knew exactly what I was feeling while I was doing this and what was going on in my life?
That's interesting, because somebody was visiting my studio, and he was looking at some of the, I think all my work has a general quietness to it, but he was looking at some particular pieces that were very meditative, I think, and he was saying they were very emotional. And then I have some works that I generate in a different way, and they sort of look more, they're a little wilder looking, they have like pores in them. And he said, and what were you feeling then? You know, and to me, I don't associate it that way. And, you know, sometimes I'll look back at work, and the thing that I mostly feel is, how did I do that? It feels very detached to me, and it feels like I can't really access that place that I got that done. Like, it just seems like stuff happens, you know, and for my work anyway, it's not the kind of thing where I can recreate it. Sometimes I've thought it would be interesting to start another piece in the same way. And I do think that's interesting, because it'll never come out the same way. But it's kind of like, that's an interesting thing to do maybe when you're blocked too. Well, you know, that piece is interesting. I'm going to start another one with some of the same elements, but it will always go off in a different direction. You know, I have to remember that too.
So also, I did want to ask, what did you always know that you wanted to pursue art? Did you go through phases where it was like you're interested in art, or maybe you're interested in other art forms? How did you lock in on what you do now?
Well, I think I've always gravitated to doing artwork, and as a kid, it was something that I got attention for, and I know that played a big part in my decision to pursue it. And I wasn't a particularly good student, so it was like, you know, something that I felt confident in. And I think when I was, let's say, when I was in high school, let's just talk about that, everybody thought, oh, she knows exactly what she wants to do, because I thought that that was what I wanted to pursue. And in college, I did continue to pursue it, but there were other things I did in college that I was really interested in, particularly weaving. And it wasn't actually working on a loom. I was very, very interested in some of the female women weavers who were doing very sculptural pieces, like Lenore Tawney and Sheila Hicks. And those were more like sculpture, but they were made out of wool and, you know, yarn and things. So very textural, very colorful, beautiful, beautiful stuff. Sheila Hicks still is working, and I love her stuff. So I did do that for a while, but I was also drawing and painting and, you know, doing other stuff. And I continued to do some weaving after I got out of school, and then it's just sort of settled into painting, you know, as a way of expressing some of those similar things, but not setting up a loom and, you know, working that way. And sculpture always interests me,
mm-hmm.
although I've never really been a committed sculptor or dedicated sculptor. Less, I have less storage problems than sculptors.
Yes, yes, I would love to talk about your storage and how you store things.
Well, you've seen it firsthand, actually.
Yeah. I mean, the storage unit is a great idea for artists to keep their stuff, though. I think that that's a really creative,
And I think you have to cull out stuff, too, every once in a while, you know.
Yeah, how do you feel about letting go of your work, whether it's giving it to somebody or, like, do you feel an attachment and it's a little hard for you to, like, maybe put it in a gallery or give it to somebody?
I think I have a harder time just getting rid of stuff, but if somebody really loves it, that's just I love the idea of somebody having it and having it be out in the world. I mean, I do think, you know, all of us work because it's our life and we're lucky to have this in our lives, but you know, you do want it to go out in the world or for people to see it too and respond to it. And, you know, I think that is a part of working. It's, you know, it's hard to keep it secret. But it's also hard to get it out in the world, so.
I know over the summer you had a showing around here. Did you feel like that was perceived really well? Do you think that the community really got, like, a good grasp of what you were doing?
That was a wonderful event. And two of the artists in that open studio are here in Catskill, and they're wonderful artists. It was just a real up, and I think it was an up because it's nice when, you know, and the artists, on one hand, you kind of want to give your work over to a gallery. Please take care of it and sell it and promote it and do all this. But it's actually more empowering and more satisfying to do it with other artists. And I felt such an up because of that. And we had a wonderful turnout of people. And the installation was in one of the artist's studios. And he has a very big, open, more beautiful than a gallery space. So everyone had a lot of space for their work. And it looked fantastic. And it was really nice. It's hard. It's sometimes hard in a situation like that or even in a gallery to have in-depth conversations about the work. That has to happen in another way, I think.
And finally, before we conclude, I want to ask you, do you feel like your life has been enriched by surrounding yourself with your art?
I can't imagine another life, though. Absolutely can't. And I can't even imagine a life without all of my friends who are artists. You know, I think that we're just so much on the same wavelength. What we do, even though our work might not look the same, it's just enriching to have those conversations and to always want to look at art and see other people's work. So, yeah, definitely.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us today on our
welcome.
First show.
I hope it goes on for you.
Thank you. Where can we find you? Do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's www.jeanfeinberg.com. And then I also have an Instagram, which is just at my name, Jean Feinberg.
Great, great. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Thank
Bella.
You all for listening. Have a great day, guys.
I saw her in a dream, exiting the bookstore lobby, sitting on a bench on Baltimore and reading Murakami. Slick with salt beneath the sun, her hands now tying up her hair. One pair of deeply tinted shades reflects my unbelieving stare. Thank you.
Gay ZMB, all zombie radio.
Hi, I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC ACRA.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Paul of Seattle, Washington. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorrington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorrington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Aunt Ida's Hand by Lisa Jones and Alva Rogers. Thank you for listening.
Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and silence lays on my heart like a heavy wool blanket. It weighs me down to the bed, but it's not warm. It weighs me down, but it's not warm at all. But sometimes when I wake up in the middle of the night, I can hear the old folks talking. They talk about the possibility of sunshine.
Look at those clouds.
Thank you, Miss.
Reckon it might rain after a while.
Really appreciate the.
They talk about the possibility of clouds.
Yeah, it sure looks like.
Sun will be out before the day ends.
Rain might.
They talk about what they eat for dinner and what they're going to eat for lunch. They talk about who's loving who and who's not loving who. They talk about who died and who's getting ready to die.
Last week, Eustace, the week before him, Mr. Easton from Bethany Church.
Sister Laura, because Sister Laura's got a birthday the day after next.
Rest in peace.
Have you seen her grandchild?
I go to sleep listening to the old folks talk about days gone by and about the days to come that will also go by.
Is she down here?
When I hear the old folks talk, I know the darkness is only passing through. And when the darkness passes, so will the silence the darkness brings. My favorite thing to do all my life, as far back as I can remember, was to get on a train called the PATH train
and go visit a woman named Miss Judy May Chance. Now, Miss Judy May Chance died 5 years back, but one morning, not so long ago, I woke up and looked out my window, and I thought to myself for the very first time that there is no one in the world who I'll ever love more than Miss Judy May Chance. It's a fact that came to me very simply, like you look outside and you see that the sky above you is blue, or you see by the clouds that rain is going to fall. I looked out my window and said, I love Miss Judy May Chance more than anyone I'll ever meet, and that was that. Miss Judy May Chance was a nice lady with a big smile. Some people don't do anything for other people, but Miss Judy liked to do for others. She helped people get their children out of jail. She gave money to the church. She cooked for her husband, chicken during the week, turkey at Christmas. Some nights she went to Atlantic City to gamble and drink scotch. But most nights she just fell asleep in front of the TV watching shows where people loved each other very much or hated each other very much, or shows that told you how many people had been killed that day and what the weather was going to be like the next day. Lots of people love other people, but the people they love don't always love them back. I know Miss Judy May Chance loved me, and I loved Miss Judy May back.
Give your grandmother some sugar, girl. And when you're coming to see your Grandma Judy, don't forget your Grandma Judy.
But just like the sky above you is blue one moment, and the next rain is gonna fall, Miss Judy May Chance passed. She just passed.
Death in the morning. Oh, death in the morning. Oh, death spare me.
When I lost Miss Judy, I lost all the people who came with her. All the people Miss Judy kept in her head.
Uncle Flat had a bald head that was flat on top. That's why they called him Flat. He worked in the post office, which was a good job at the time. Nanny Anna had one short leg, and she took to mending and did rich ladies' hair. And Aunt Ada. Now she was someone to meet. You got her build and you got her pretty hair and your singing. I bet you got that from her too.
I met Aunt Ada once before she passed, but all I have of her now is this picture of her, this picture of her house, and the story of Aunt Ada's hand.
Willie? Willie? Is Willie dead? Tell him to come see his Aunt Ada sometime.
Aunt Ada was Miss Judy May Chance's oldest sister, which made her my great aunt.
Ada, you see, wasn't regular.
My Uncle Kane told me once that Aunt Ada wasn't regular. For many years, he said, she only wore white.
You know, spiritual clothes. White.
Aunt Ada wore white because she was called to a religious life.
I've been traveling round the country, just traveling, preaching the Lord's word and singing the Lord's praises. I've been to Egypt, and I've been to the Holy Land, Israel, on a plane out of New York. Your grandmother, Judy, brought me to the airport and picked me up when I got back.
Miss Judy said that Aunt Ada was a member of the Cary Baptist Church in Cary, North Carolina. Cary Baptist didn't take to women preachers, so Aunt Ada went on the road.
She preached to men in prisons. She preached to old people in nursing homes. She preached to anyone who would listen. But most of all, she sang.
Don't care how you do me. Since King Jesus, he chose me.
Oh, just God's word, however it came out. None of Aunt Ada's four brothers and sisters, Yudi, Cain, Netta, and Bethel Jr., were called to a religious life. Everyone in the family was always wondering how Aunt Ada got hers. And everyone in Cary, North Carolina, where Aunt Ada was born, raised, and laid to rest, was always wondering the same thing.
Was always wondering the same thing.
Same thing.
Now, I think it had to do with her having to raise those four kids when her mother left for New York. Here she was, just a young child herself, not but 15, raising those kids because her mama left her daddy to go live with some man up in New York. Then her daddy died right out of nowhere one day. His heart failed on him, love sickness. And there's Ada, nothing but a little girl raising a heap of bad kids.
Miss Yudi said that my great-grandmother, Isabel Lovett,
who was half Cherokee and kinda uppity,
left my great-grandfather, Bethel Lovett, with the kids because she was tired of farm living, dusty roads, and feeding chickens. She wanted to live a life like they live up north, big cars and nights on the town. Bethel didn't want to give up his farm or his land to send her there. Pretty soon, Isabel found a man who would. Bethel died of a heart attack about a year later. And Aunt Ada took over the farm and raised her two brothers and two sisters until they got into their teens and left for New York themselves. All except the youngest, Cain, who helped her with the farm.
We kept up the farm, soybeans and chickens, as long as we could. And we sold the farm, but we kept as much of the land as we could. Along the way, though, we did have to sell bits and pieces just to keep up on taxes and keep the house and see the mall off something road. And that was our land, and we owned that. And on the other side, all the way down to the gas station where Johns River Road crosses, we owned all that, too. A lot of land we owned once.
It was not long after their father died that Aunt Ada found religion, or as Uncle Cain called it, religion.
That's right. You see, Aunt Ada never let the sadness out, only so much. When Daddy died, she just went about her business, you see, never smiling, and almost worked herself to the grave just like him. Heart problems. She'd get sick, but she'd keep on working, see, 'cause she didn't want to fall behind with the farm or leave us kids to run wild. It was just her nature not to ask for help. Well, she was just like Daddy that way.
One afternoon, it was summertime. Aunt Ada had washed Netta's hair and given it a hard press to last 2 weeks.
Sit still, girl.
Netta messed her hair up an hour later playing tag with one of the boys up the road. Well, Aunt Ada lit into her with a switch. Before she could get 2 good lashes in, Aunt Ada lost her breath and had to go lie down. She stayed in her room for the rest of the evening without a word to the kids. Later that night, they heard her cry full of pain. Bethel Jr., Yudi, Netta, and Cain all ran to Aunt Ada's door, but she wouldn't let them in.
I'm all right now. Y'all just go back to bed.
The next morning, Aunt Ada had found God. Or as Aunt Ada said,
God found me. Oh, my sister didn't understand me. And my brother didn't understand me. But my spirits were high and the devil was low. And my heart was with Jesus, and that's where I was gonna go. Willie? Willie? Is Willie dead? Tell him to come see his Aunt Ada sometime.
A simple white house surrounded by hedges and little yellow flowers, buttercups, I think you call them. No picket fence. One weeping willow tree in the front yard and an empty chicken coop out back. Aunt Ada's house, Cary, North Carolina, August 12, 1975. Aunt Ada was 82 years old when I met her for the first and for the only time. Uncle Kane, who it turns out looks just like my father, took me by her house.
Ada, open up now. It's Kane. I know you're there. Brought you someone to meet. Well, yes, you see, Ada's losing her hearing ears.
All the blinds were drawn. It was dark and still. Finally, a little face peers out from the top window.
This here's Willie's daughter, Judy's grandchild, and your grandniece come to see us from New York.
Willie? Willie? Is Willie dead?
No, Aunt Ada.
Well, tell him to come see his Aunt Ada sometime.
Ada, why are you living in darkness? Open up some of these blinds.
Aunt Ada took me around her house. We walked very slowly, me on her arm and her showing me things. It was a simple house with yellow flowers on the wallpaper, just like the ones out front. But the things in it, so many lovely things, so many lovely old things. A redwood dressing table, an oak bed that took up half the room.
My father made that bed. All five of us were born in that bed.
A collection of dolls with cracked porcelain faces. Oh, I wanted one of those. Can I have one of your dolls, Aunt Ada?
Now you know it's hard for me to part with my things.
Give her a doll. What you need with those dolls anyway?
Willie? Willie? Is Willie dead? Well, tell him to come see his Aunt Ada sometime.
Well, you see, Ada's ain't well anymore.
There was a china collection, plates all the way from Holland, and Aunt Ada's gospel records.
Go down, Moses. Everybody knows that song, but not too many people know about this Moses. I've got a Moses song for you, girl.
Moses, Moses, don't you let King Pharaoh overtake you.
Moses, Moses,
don't you let King Pharaoh overtake you.
Moses, Moses, don't you let your daughter overtake you. In some
Aunt Ada asked me to walk her to the bathroom. I was going to wait outside, but she led me by the elbow into the room. When Aunt Ada unbuttoned her dress to change the pad of camphor on her chest, I noticed a thick scar right between her breasts. It was a smooth brown keloid in the shape of a hand. Aneta, can I ask you, what's that from? You want to know? All right, I'll tell you. Right after great-grandfather Bethel died, Aunt Ada took a switch to Netta for messing up her hair. That child didn't know how to keep her hair together. Couldn't keep a press in her hair, braids always coming out, or messing with boys like she did. Aunt Ada lost her breath while she was beating Netta, and she took to bed with a fever and sharp pains in her chest. The pains became sharper and sharper. Aneta got out of bed to walk to her bathroom. It was after midnight, and the house was pitch dark, but there was a white light streaming from the bathroom. A bright light, a blinding white light. I didn't want to walk into that light, 'cause I knew the Lord was trying to take me. So I told the Lord, I'm not ready for you right now. There are a few things I got to do here. I'm just not ready. And so the Lord said, all right, Ada, all right. And then he reached out and put his hand on me like this. And when I woke up the next morning, I had this hand on my chest. That's God's hand, you know. The hand of God. Like Aunt Ada didn't want me to leave that day. She kept showing me things from her collections and old photographs in large oval frames. They were photographs, but they almost looked like paintings. See, that's Nana Anna, my mother, and Uncle Flat, my uncle. His hair, it always did stay flat like that, and Uni.
Does Uni still have those wobbly knees?
Aunt Ada, were your parents or were your grandparents slaves? No slaves in our family. We come from freed people who owned a lot of land. See that shopping mall down back? My father owned that land, and much, much more than that. Much more. Well, they took away my license, talking about I can't drive no more, and they talk about selling the land I got left and my house, and no.
All right, got to go, Ada, got to go now. Got to take her to Raleigh. We don't want her to miss her plane.
Let me just ask you this. You Willie's daughter? Is Willie dead? No, Aunt Ada. Well, you tell him to come see his Aunt Ada sometime. Well, don't you forget about your Aunt Ada.
to excuse Ada for not giving you that doll. Not like she needed it or anything. Being the way that she is, she never did like to let go of her things. She just didn't change. See, she lost her mother, and then she lost her father. Heart problems. Then Bethel Jr., Netta, and Yudi left her for New York, you see, and, well, she had a husband once, Scudder, but he died of black lung. She had an adopted son, but someone shot him in Raleigh a few years back. You see, all Ada's really had is God, her things, and that house, so she holds on to all of them kind of tightly.
The year Miss Yudi Mae Chance died, they took Aunt Ada to a nursing home.
Now, Netta said it was best. See, to tell you the truth, Netta never had no use for Yudi after she found Lijon, or no use for North Carolina after Netta found New York. She's only been back a couple of times. Well, you see, the other sisters like to drink and dance and laugh loud, but Ada didn't like that. Only religious singing, you know, singing to the Lord. So I guess they just grew apart, and Netta manages the property now, and she does what she wants with it. And soon as Ada passes, I reckon Netta's gonna sell her house. Well, she sold all Ada's things, but I saved these photographs for you. That's a photo of your Aunt Ada standing by the willow tree in her white clothes, and that's a photo of a house. See how wide it is? I'd just given it a fresh coat of paint. Well, I'd do anything for Ada, you know that. I just can't stand to see her now. Can't remember a thing. Far as I'm concerned, she's just like dead, 'cause she can't remember a thing. And when you can't remember, you die. You just die.
Tell him to come see his Aunt Ada sometime. Don't you forget your Aunt Ada.
You just heard Aunt Ida's Hand by Lisa Jones and Alva Rogers, broadcast by New American Radio.
This is deprogramming from the Universal Media Network.